Okay,
he got tied up. He had a full schedule of like slow walks on the beach, slow sex, you know, hammock laying,
talking to him,
looking at the monkeys.
Hey, Warners, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About, the podcast that makes everything sexy again. I'm Gina Tremarco, founder and sales trainer at Pivot 10 Results and Carolina Improv. And today I'm bringing you this intro because, well, it's kind of another rogue sort of episode, but this time with a guest. So a guest got to go rogue with us. Today on this episode, we chatted with Jacqueline Jaskinowski, and I'm sure I butchered that, but she says it correctly on the interview. She's the founder of Shift Awake Group. After 17 years in human resources, customer experience, and executive coaching in corporate for a prestigious luxury brand, BMW, she left and founded Shift Awake Group. Her motivation was to inspire leaders and employees to land on their purpose through a mindset of awareness using conscious-based tools. Jacqueline believes innovation is consciousness. Without consciousness, status quo is accepted, even if your inner voice tells you differently. Jacqueline works with leaders who want to differentiate themselves from their competitors and elevate their people landscape. At Shift Awake Group, she helps leaders implement an ethos strategy, then supports them with team and individual coaching around mindfulness, creative thinking, and awareness. And what I'm super excited about this episode is that Jacqueline also talks about the work that she's going to be doing with Televerde. And I know a lot of you have heard me talk a lot about working with Televerde and doing improv for sales training with women in prison. And you'll hear an episode about that coming soon. But she talks a little bit about that because she's also going to be working with Televerde. So sit back and really get ready for this awesome show with Jacqueline Jaskinowski, Rachel Pitts, Keith Walters, and myself.
Hi, Jacqueline.
Hi,
welcome.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you. It's nice to witness all of this.
You were warned.
It's true. I signed all the paperwork before deciding to do this.
Yes, you did.
It's important to
know. I met Jacqueline a month or two ago. How long ago was it?
It was in April, actually.
Phoenix,
April.
Arizona at the...
Yeah.
Wow. Time flies.
That was the... what was
at
it?
The Conscious Capitalism National Conference. And yeah. Jacqueline and I sat down together at lunch and worked an exercise together, and just a phenomenal woman. And she has a company called Shift Awake Group that we're going to talk a little bit about today as we talk with her.
Awesome. So welcome.
Thank you, guys. It's exciting to be here. I appreciate it.
So let's get started about talking about your company, Shift Awake Group. And I'm really interested, how did you shift from your career track to...
Nice play on Rachel. Terms. I know, Gina. I'm loving this already. Great start.
I'm witty like that. How did you shift from what you were doing career-wise to Shift Awake? And give us a little bit of background what you were doing before you made that
move.
Sure.
So I was 17 years with a luxury automotive brand. It was BMW corporate. And I know a lot.
Oh, wait.
A long time.
Do you have the, did they let you go away with an umbrella? We have a whole nother episode about the umbrella.
Oh, really?
I don't think I've told her this.
The Rolls Royce umbrella?
Oh.
Which umbrella?
Did you get that wrong?
The BMW umbrella. Do you have one of those?
Interesting. No, I don't know about this story.
Oh, well, it's just another podcast. Continue.
Okay, cool. Yes, no problem. I'm going to look this up now because I'm curious about what this might be. But BMW also owns Rolls Royce, and Rolls Royce have that cute little handy dandy umbrella that sits into the door. And I always say, did it come with an individual to like hold it up for everybody? Because you pay so much money for the damn car. But it doesn't. It's just an umbrella. So back to the story. BMW. I was with them for 17 plus years. And during that time, I actually went and became certified to become a coach back in 2014. And while I was there, going through my coaching program, the whole coaching program transformed myself because I started using all the shit that I learned on myself. And I recognized how valuable all of these tools that I had learned were, not only for myself, but also for other people. Because I started integrating coaching practices and the things I learned into what I was doing at BMW. And during this time, you know, there were some changes from a corporate standpoint. I don't know, you know, obviously how many of your listeners are in corporate, but they know probably that sometimes you can go through some challenges, whether it be red tape, political boundaries, whatever that might be. And there was a point in 2017 where I had to look myself in the mirror and recognize that I was not excited every single day waking up and doing what I was doing. And I knew I could either continue on because I already had devoted so much of my career to this organization, or I could take a risk and say yes to myself and move another direction. And so I took the latter of the two, and it was one of the biggest decisions I think I've ever made because I had no idea what was waiting for me on the other side. I didn't have a new job. I didn't have this company formed. I didn't have anything. And I just knew, though, I needed to almost get rid of all the stuff that was tying me down to this day in and day out routine and take a risk to discover what was waiting for me. And so that was in October 2017. Yeah,
That's a big risk to take, leaving something like BMW and going out on your own. What was the tipping point? Because you said you went through all this coaching and you started using the coaching on yourself. What was it about that coaching and what were you doing with executives there, if anything, that kind of gave you this idea of you wanted to leave and do that?
Great question. So about the coaching, I learned how your thoughts create everything you have or don't have in your life, and how when you learn the tools to create the thoughts that generate happiness and joy and you put it into practice over and over and over again, you can have a life that you only dreamed of. And I started to do that, and I started having so much just joy, just who I was as an individual, that I thought, oh my God, everybody needs this. Like, everybody should feel this way. So at BMW, when I started integrating some of these coaching tools, I got to a point where they were allowing me to do things that were not my job. As an example, I created a workshop called The Power of Hello, integrating some of these tools into a presentation and a training for the dealerships to help them kind of get out of their way. And the reason I say that is because many of our dealerships, I was finding they weren't greeting the people as soon as they walked into the door at the dealership. They would prejudge them. Yes, I know. Exactly, Gina. They would prejudge them. They would say maybe they can't afford that car or they're not the buyer. And so customers were coming in the doors and then they would leave after 30 minutes or 45 minutes and nobody addressed them. And so I was putting together these programs and training to help them recognize that their thoughts were getting in their way of the sale, that their thoughts were preventing them from finding the opportunity on the other side of hello. And so when they sent me around the country to do this for dealerships that were interested, and these individuals, these employees at the dealerships were like, holy shit, I never thought about it that way. I just was thinking, I know exactly what a buyer looks like. And I was letting my mindset and my previous experience and perceptions indicate who I was or was not talking to. And so I had so many stories after trainings where people said, oh my gosh, Jacqueline, I made it a point to start to say hello to every single person. And I had 5 people buy in one day, like miraculous, crazy stories. And when I saw these things kind of happen, I started recognizing, oh my gosh, we need to be giving our dealerships better tools, not just process, not just systems, but we need to give them mindset tools. And this was one of those things that was a tipping point for me where I recognized I could do more good on my own than being behind a corporate door and ivory tower.
Can you tell us more about that? Like, why?
Why could I do more on my own?
Yeah.
Because I could then make decisions. I wouldn't have to go through all the political red tape in order to pull something off. As an example, many people probably have experienced this in corporate where you might have an amazing project or program or idea, but then you need to circle it through 17,000 other people in order to move forward. So instead of being able to be nimble and, you know, step into action very quickly, you might delay action 3, 4, 5 months until everybody's on board, which means your idea might change, you might lose the steam, you might get it, it might completely shift based on who is adding input. And on my own, I'm nimble, I'm fast, I can be able to get in front of the right people who are the decision makers and get the information to them much quicker.
Not to mention that if you had stuck with just BMW, then you wouldn't be able to spread this message to other industries or even other car dealerships, I'm sure, because they would want to keep your genius within their, you know, within their own boundaries. So there,
you're 100%
there's that
right.
too.
Yeah, you're right. And it's been an interesting journey because, to your point, Rachel, like, I've been able to kind of spread my wings. So anybody who's got an open mind and who's willing to learn something new and maybe more progressive, I can make an impact.
You know, that is there's a huge story with that, the power of hello and the prejudging. Like, a personal story of mine, my engagement ring, which is a very nice ring.
Yes.
But my husband told the story when he walked into the jewelry store. He was dressed like junk. Like, he was in, like, you know, flannel pants and kind of ripped t-shirt a little bit. And the woman, the salesperson, prejudged him big time. And she was like, oh, let's look over here at the, you know, gay. And he was like, no, this is not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for what's back there. And she was like, oh, and now they're like, oh, Mr. Pitts, Mr. Pitts. But she, you know, he likes to buy, but he doesn't dress up to buy something. So you can't prejudge people. You just never know who you're dealing with. Yeah. But people tend to do that. I imagine at car dealerships for sure. Was such a huge luxury item. They're like, that guy can't afford this and those flip-flops.
I have so many stories exactly like the one that you told. One such story was a gentleman in California told me about this, that there was a guy who came into the dealership and, again, scruffy, holes in his jeans, looked like he hadn't showered in forever, and nobody would address him. And this one young lady decided to go up front and to speak with him. And as she starts doing her needs assessment and after she's done with the grading, she finds out it's Tom Petty.
Killing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Paid cash, right? Exactly, on the spot for the cars. And he said that was one story. He's like, I will never prejudge anyone because you just never know. Everybody has a story. And not to mention, you think about it, so many people want to be casual and they don't want to be, you know, they don't want to have all the luxury items on them anymore these days. They just want to be themselves. And you just, it's when you prejudge somebody, you just get in your own way.
And the,
I think to the opposite of that, sometimes people, to your point, are not going to dress up as much because they're afraid that they're going to be perceived as having so much money in the world that they can afford everything you're going to sell them.
Yeah, and a lot of times the people that have the most wealth are downplaying it, you know, and the people that actually don't have the money are playing it up because they want to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. So you just, you never know.
Just never know, right? You never know. And once you kind of get rid of that judgment and that prejudgment, life is so much more fun, you know, because you look at everyone and everything and every situation as an opportunity versus, oh, I don't want to do that because, or, oh, I don't want to talk to that person because I want to find out what happens once I get to the hello, what's waiting for me on the other side. You know, is it my fiance, right? Is it my new best friend? Is it my new opportunity for work? Whatever that might look like.
What do you think is the main mindset problem that people have that creates that type of prejudgment? That, you know, what is it? Because it definitely has to do with the salesperson and their perception. So what would you say is the biggest mindset block that you encounter when you're dealing with training people?
Yeah, so there is definitely one that I would say would be the assumption. So this assumption is that if it happened to me once before, it's going to happen to me again. And if it happens, you know, happened before and that person looked this way or had this many kids with them or whatever that might look like, I'm just going to stay away from it because I invested so much time and I got burned. So I'm not going to put myself out there again. And we all have these different kinds of blocks, right, that step up in front of us in order to prevent us from moving forward. And the challenge is that if we allow that block to be the predominant thought process, then we don't get very far. We don't end up putting ourselves out there for the new job. We don't end up, you know, doing whatever it might be based on fear of the result that it could potentially burn me again.
You know, we just recently interviewed Jeb Blunt, and he talks about he's a sales expert and trainer, and he talks about the fear of future consequences.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's the fear of future consequences, and it really is, you know, all tied to the brain and fight or flight. And if that happened before, it's going to happen again. And how is that going to impact my future if I invest any time into that?
Yeah.
getting past, you know, look, because you're stereotyping or you have a bias, you'd rather stay in the status quo because it feels safer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, because when you put yourself out there, there's this vulnerability, right? And that vulnerability is what people think gets them in trouble. But in reality, it's really not. The vulnerability is what allows you to build relationships, right? And be able to experience more new things, if you will.
Hey, Warners, you have probably heard me talk on several occasions about how much I love wearing red lipstick. Lipstick is just one of those things that makes me feel good about how I look. And sometimes a little extra enhancement to my lips from Dermavogue doesn't hurt either. I've known Dr. Jim Turek of Dermavogue for years. He is not only my doctor who keeps my body healthy, he and his Dermavogue team keep my face looking healthy. And maybe a little younger, maybe. I mean, I love it when people say, something looks different about your face. But they can't really tell because that's really what you want. You want to go to a place that makes your face look as good and it makes people wonder what happened. So what's really cool about Dermavogue being our premier sponsor of this show is the fact that I'm a client and I was a client before they became a partner of the show. So we're excited about that. Dermavogue has been offering the greater Myrtle Beach area the best in cosmetic and aesthetic dermatology since 2003. Opened by Dr. James Turek, Dermavogue combines expert medical knowledge with cutting-edge technology, bringing you the most effective, flawless solutions to any skincare or cosmetic need. Their patients enjoy only the absolute best in laser technology, including photodynamic laser therapy, hydrofacials, and V-beam laser treatments, as well as the latest fillers such as Botox, skin peels, facials, and more. At Dermavogue, they engage you in the process of total body health to ensure your satisfaction with their comprehensive selection of the most up-to-date, non-invasive cosmetic, dermatology, and spa treatments. It's human nature to want to look your best, right? Let Dermavogue help you get there. Schedule your consultation today by calling 843-357-2444 or visit dermavogue.com and tell them that the Women Your Mother Warned You About sent you. You can also find them on our website. Go check it out.
So do you think that women can differentiate themselves from their competitors and elevate their people landscape? What can you say about that?
For females in general?
Mm-hmm. Especially women.
I think for us, we have a natural ability to tap into empathy. And empathy, especially in the automotive industry, is a skill set that is needed so badly. Because so often right now, we have such a bad history in the industry, right? Of manipulating people, not being transparent, all of those kinds of things that people get quite anxious about when they come into the dealership. And so they're coming in, I always say, with their dukes up. Like they're coming in to the door, like I'm ready to fight. And I explain that in order to actually do well by your customer and elevate the customer experience, that it's super critical to be able to approach that situation and that customer with empathy. Because when you already out of the gate, diffuse the situation and acknowledge, I know this is tough. Like, I know you're coming into the dealership and you're probably a little bit anxious because who wouldn't be? You know, buying a big car is a big purchase, and being able to kind of diffuse that those feelings of nervousness and anxiousness right out of the gate, I think women are able to do that a little more often than men. A lot of men can, but it's more natural, I think, in our DNA as nurturers, you know, to be able to understand somebody from their point of view. And I think from the automotive industry in general, it's really, really critical that dealerships diversify their employment by having females involved in the business, because the fact of the matter is females are the purchaser, if you will, in the car buying process. The women are the ones that make the decisions.
Yeah.
Right? So having more women in the workplace as well in automotive is such an added need and something that is so beneficial for the business.
Have any of you watched the show Good Girls?
No.
Why would I watch something about good girls?
Yeah, I only watch bad girls.
I was about to say, what, I'm such a bad
Okay,
girl.
Wait, this show, they're not good girls. Well, they're women that are, I think most, some of them, they're not all married, but those, some are married, some have kids, some don't. Maybe they all have kids. Anyway, they somehow fall into a world of being bad girls, where they're like doing these things, kind of looking like looking the part of good suburban housewives, and like literally getting into like selling drugs, and like it gets so convoluted and contrasting, but so funny. Anyway, one of them, her husband owns a car dealership, and he's really suffering with sales, and so she happened to go in one day to like bring him something or drop something off, and she ends up talking to a woman who's like looking at a car, and she, the woman started to walk away because of the way the male was treating her, the male salesperson. And she kind of jumped in. She's like, oh, do you want to try, you want to get in and sit in the car? I'll hold the baby for you. You know, cause she was like with her little baby. And like next thing you know, she sells the car.
Nice.
And her husband's like so irritated with her, and she ends up actually taking over the dealership.
I love it.
Because she was so good.
Drop the mic.
At, yep. She was so good at relating to the female buyer.
Mm-hmm. I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting because now more and more you'll see female service advisors in dealerships that get it. There were, gosh, in the last probably 3 months, I've been into two dealerships that only had female advisors, service advisors. And you can imagine, though, what they face by the men, the male customers coming in, constantly challenging them on their knowledge about the vehicle. And so these women, you know, they got it. They're tough, right? In the industry, like we're used to this shit. So it doesn't bother us by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah. We already know how to navigate these conversations. But in sitting and speaking with these women, they said, it's so interesting. You know, the women never challenge me, but the men usually will say, you know, well, what about this blah, 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 you know? And technically a service advisor doesn't need to know about the car. I mean, they really don't. They need to know maybe some high level kinds of things. That's what technicians are for. And so if ever needed, obviously they can go to a technician and get the dirty, you know, on the vehicle if somebody wants to know the ins and outs. But it's just very interesting that there's a perception as well of customers coming in that maybe women don't know the car so well, so they kind of give it to them a bit.
Jacqueline, can I ask you about one other thing? You know, the auto industry is such a male dominated industry. What kind of mindset tools can you suggest for women to use, especially women in you know, male-dominated industries, in order to really navigate the waters better? You know, from your toolbox of mindset tools, anything you can pull out?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. I think the most foundational one that I would always recommend, and this is going to take some research. This is going to take, I actually have an online training, just so you know, but it's geared towards automotive. But in it is the foundation, which is the understanding about what I call PER squared. Pings, emotions, respond or react. Pings, I consider pings that little thought that's boom, 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 boom in your brain. Like if you think of your brain like a computer, right? All day long, it's hammering pings all day long because that's the job of the brain, right? So think of your brain as a computer hammering these pings all day long, and the brain doesn't give a shit whether it's a good ping or a bad ping. It just knows I need to create pings all day long. When you start to tap into meditation and awareness and a conscious state, all of a sudden you start to recognize, oh, wait, that ping, that doesn't make me feel good. Or, oh, that ping makes me feel good. I call them like pinto pings, like the ones that blow the fuck up. Okay, can I say F? Can I say that? Okay.
Yeah. No.
No.
Yes.
Okay, great. So
it's too late.
Those, the ones that blow the fuck up. Okay. So I consider those, obviously, those bad pings that you kind of want to get rid of. And I consider the Ferrari pings.
I told you
pings,
my mother warned me about her.
I know. This is right. I should know I'm allowed to speak like this on this podcast. I feel so at home. This is perfect. I always say you can't take the New Jersey, you know, out of the girl, or you can take the girl out of Jersey, but you can't take the New Jersey out of the girl, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then I always say that there's these Ferrari-like pings, the pings that like, they just drive so nice. They feel so good. So when you have a ping, it creates E, which is an emotion. And that emotion either makes you feel good or bad, but you get to choose what kind of ping you're holding on to. It's your choice. Your brain's on you. You're making a physical choice. Then, depending upon how you're feeling, you're either going to respond to a situation or you're going to react. And a reaction is usually an old behavior. A reaction is, obviously, you're a female in a dealership. You're working as a service advisor. Some guy challenges you and you tell him to go take a hike. A response is where you kind of push the pause between the emotion and the action. And the response is where you pause and say, wait, how do I want to play this out? how do I want to, what kind of action do I want to take? Am I going to feel good about that action? And being able to respond is kind of that space in between is where you're getting to choose a way that's more conscious and more mindful. So for me, not only women, but also men can use this foundational skill set of PER squared in learning how to create a more conscious-based mindset. And it is not easy. I am here to tell you it takes a long time to master it. But what will start to happen is that you're going to get quicker to change your ping. You're all of a sudden, Gabrielle Bernstein is somebody I love. I love to read her book. She's a spiritual healer and just her, I just love everything about her. And she always says, I don't care really what happens on the end, like how you react or respond. But what I do care is how quick do you come back to your center? How quick do you come back to your conscious mind if you let your unconscious mind just run everything for you? Mm-hmm. So that would be one of the things, Keith, that I would recommend is just really starting that foundation, which is PER squared. Learning how to monitor those thoughts that are incoming.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great, easy acronym to remember and the words and so forth. Yeah, it's about owning your own feelings, right? When you respond.
Yeah. Right, because...
emotional intelligence.
Yes, exactly. What people say is about them, but what you hear is about you.
Right.
I think oftentimes people are always deflecting, right? Because it's easier. And it's a lot, if I don't have to take accountability, then I don't have to do any work. So it's all about them. But the reverse is true. When you start to take accountability, you'll notice things just completely start to shift in your life.
Like it.
Good.
That is so perfect. Jacqueline, let me ask you about one other thing. In a recently past podcast, we interviewed Michelle Sirocco of Televerde. Yeah. And you're working with Michelle just a little bit to... Yeah. Create a program to use incarcerated prisoners in the auto industry?
I am.
Tell us about that.
So it is at the very beginning stages. Okay, so here we go. Because now let's just get it on out there. Okay, so here's...
Tell us what you can.
Okay, so
divulge what you
this
can.
This is the situation. The automotive industry has a significant gap in technicians. When I say significant, I'm telling you 37,000 technicians is our shortage per year. By obviously 10 years, multiply that out, that's 370,000 techs we're going to be short. What's happening in the industry is this. Nobody's coming in to be technicians because, let's just face it, our millennials don't want to get dirty. It is what it is, guys. I love you, but you don't want to get dirty, okay? In addition, they don't want to work hard, right? They want to be able to become entrepreneurs because that's what we are seeing on YouTube and Instagram and whatever it else, which is fantastic. You know what? Kudos to you and let me know when that happens. Okay. So what we are seeing, though, is also the technicians. Are you enjoying that, Keith? The technicians are retiring. We've got guys and gals who've been doing tech work for 20 years, 30 years. They're exhausted. Their back hurts. The cars are more complicated. Things are changing. I have been in over 100 plus dealerships in the last year and a half. This is on repeat. The theme is on repeat. So when I was at the Conscious Capitalism Conference and I had the pleasure of talking to Keith and learning about what's going on at Televerde, I was like, holy shit, why has nobody thought of this idea? So what I'm doing is I reached out to Michelle and we're going to work together and partner together to develop a program to rehabilitate our incarcerated, to create a pipeline of technicians to solve the gap. Right now, according to stats, it depends on what stats you read, but anywhere there's 650 to 700,000 inmates released on an annual basis. These inmates, typically 50 to 60% of them is the recidivism rate. They go right back into jail because they don't have the skills and nobody will hire them. Or if they have the skills and some of them have bachelor's degrees and they happen to get in there afterwards and now they've got to tick a box, felony, or they've got to say, yes, I serve time. So there's prejudgment, going back to our pre-qualification and prejudgment. So what is happening is, unfortunately, these men and women, they have to go back into the system because they result to things that they know, right? To basically feed their families and create some kind of life for themselves, which isn't at all. So they go right back in and they're in a cycle. And my belief is that this doesn't have to be. Like we can help more people by creating a program that not only solves the technician gap, across the entire country, but also reduces taxpayer money to house these individuals, which I'm sure maybe Michelle talked about, and give them a life that they probably never knew possible. Technicians can make anywhere between wherever, depends on where you live, but they can make anywhere between starting salary, $45,000, all the way upwards of $150,000+ a year. This is life-changing for many people. And all I can say is that if we can pull, when I pull this off, we're going to be able to witness and help and contribute to society completely turning around, where maybe these people didn't know if they even had a hope before they found this program. So I'm on the infancy stages of this. I'm working on a pilot program right now. I found a prison and I found a community school that I'm working on trying to bring together at this point in time. And as I start to pilot this out and actually get some real stats, right, to show that it's working, then my goal is to model this out across the whole country.
Really fascinating. Yeah. After talking with Michelle the other day, I just mentioned the conversation to my manager, even in the mortgage office. And he actually was like, hold on, I need to sit down for a second and think about that. It's just so powerful to think of all these people that you're mentioning that they've got nothing but time to learn a skill.
Yeah.
And they want to learn a skill so that they don't end up in that vicious cycle. And things like what you're saying that are so needed. It's brilliant. And people are like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know. And nobody's thinking differently because all of the dealerships are pulling from the same pool. They're all spending hundreds of thousands of dollars into training programs for high schoolers or people who are just getting into college. But they're all begging from Paul to steal from Peter or whatever that phrase is, I forget. But anyway, you know what I'm trying to say, right?
Yeah.
They're all pulling from the same pool. And then the technicians, when they start working for a dealership, as soon as one other dealership goes, I got a dollar more an hour. Are you interested in coming over for this? Or I'll make sure this happens. Or can you come over? And they're just running. They're just running across. So the dealerships are having a really hard time. And I think this thinking about helping somebody who's been incarcerated, there's a lot of prejudice, there's a lot of perception, right? And so my role in this whole mix with working with Michelle is to help the culture of the dealership shift as well in order to accept this new situation. Because I don't want to spend all the time training and helping my guys, right, or gals in prison and then put them in an environment that is a fear-based culture. I would lose my shit if that was happening, right? So I got to make sure the culture is ready and nurturing and willing and open-minded and that I can do this match where it's just a beautiful match together. So
you in essence have to find those organizations that are going to either have the culture and be open to it or are looking for help to become that culture.
That's exactly right. Exactly. And from my experience in dealerships, ladies and gentlemen, what do you think I experience on a regular basis in dealerships?
Yeah, not quite the culture that's already accepting.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And there's so many leaders, unfortunately, that are leading with fear-based leadership styles because that's all they know how to do. You have employees and people who are running around like scared little kids, you know, because they don't feel that they have an option or they don't feel people care. And they don't leave necessarily because depending on where they're located, there might not be another dealership close by. Or if there are, maybe that's worse than they know it, you know. So these folks, they're not willing to take a leap to leave a career. They stay there and they take it.
Well, that brings us to the whole status quo thing, that they're going to stay in the status quo because it's that fear of the future consequences. It's safer for me to stay in this situation than to move on and take a risk. I'm just going to stay with what
that's
I
exactly
know.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And if you can imagine someone like myself who knows better and knows what's available for them, right? It's like, sometimes it breaks my heart because I can't care more than they do. And so if somebody's not ready to listen or somebody's not willing to be coached or they're not open enough to think about other possibilities, and there's really no traction, there's no movement, right? I've got to back out of that and wait and see if they come around or I'm on to the next client. And oftentimes I'm not working a lot with those leaders that are in that position per se, because to me, I don't really want to work with people anymore that don't want to help themselves so much. I want to work with the people that want to help themselves. They just don't know how, and they need some guidance.
Keith, what's your take or thoughts on those types of cultures? Because you've worked in a lot of scenarios where you've made a culture happier or better, or you've left maybe not the best culture. Do you have some thoughts around that?
Well, I agree. The fear-based culture is just going to kill that potential. And there are you know, leaders out there who recognize that if they want to grow their business, if they want to, have the talent which is necessary to grow the business, they're going to have to change the culture more so today than ever. And I think that's actually, Jacqueline, from your perspective, one of the things to investigate is how willing there are cultures that are not great, but they're willing to change if they're willing to change at the top. And oftentimes it can be an economic decision. And this sounds like a real economic decision and a great way to force it.
Yeah, I mean, this could be a game changer, really, for automotive. If those individuals that be want to get on board, I mean, this could change everything for manufacturers, for the communities. It could solve a crisis, what I call an epidemic in the industry that's just going to keep on growing until we think differently.
It's probably the biggest hurdle, though, is getting over that fear, and it goes back to your. Ping, emotion, respond, react. Everybody's programmed to go ping, emotion, react when it comes to, yes. Which is my first reaction when I heard what Televerde was doing, when it comes to, hiring a felon.
Yeah, and you're right, because there's fear right around it. And I it's interesting because depending upon which part of the country you go to, for example, I was in a couple of dealerships in the Brooklyn, Queens area. And I shared this, and I've been sharing this idea with the individual service managers of the stores just to gauge their feedback and interest and see if they think it's a crazy idea, see if they think, they're interested a little bit. And many of them, believe it or not, have been like, wow, that's really interesting. But how would you overcome my employees being nervous and blah, 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 whatever, which makes total sense. And that's why working together with Michelle would be critical, because they have wraparound services with their non-for-profit, which I would actually partner up with as well. Well, interestingly enough, one of the gentlemen who was on the sales floor came in, he was a sales manager, and he says to me, actually, my best guys are from prison. I go, okay, tell me more about that. What do you mean? He's like, yeah, well, so-and-so was in jail for committing murder for about like 15 years, and he's my best sales guy. And I was like, okay, so you're saying there's a chance. That's really a good thing to know. Okay, this is really positive. again, it just goes back to perception and what your experience is like. And if you ask somebody in rural Iowa that question, they might not have the same kind of response, right? They might not be as open. So I've got to look at like parts of the country I might have more challenges with, depending upon where people are located.
This is kind of off topic, but what's triggering for me thinking about this is, people go to prison because they've done something, they've broken the law, they have to be punished. But where's the thought process on how we help reform them? Right? So it's like with kids, it's like, okay, your kid did something bad, you punish them, and then you try to teach them so that they learn, so that they do better next time. But it feels like that's not really what's happening, right? All that downtime that they're in prison and they have time to learn and get rehabilitated to an extent. But then we just kind of throw them back out there to do it all over again.
You're 100% right, Gina. And the more research that I've been doing, I've been finding not all prisons often offer training programs. All inmates have the opportunity to learn and to grow while they're there. And so that's why providing a trade program where also the prison doesn't have to do all the work, because they are so lean. And I've been finding that there's funding for prisons to develop different training programs. But some of the research I've found is that the individuals who are responsible for that don't have the bandwidth to even create more programs with the money that's available to them. So if somebody can come in and actually take some of that burden off for the prison, then that actually helps them out. And then they're willing to create something because they've got the legs, you know, somebody else is doing all the labor for it. So that's what's been really, you know, fascinating, at least just from the research that I've done, is that they just need some help. And if we offer a great idea, then they might be willing to just say, run with it. Let me know how it's working.
That's crazy. Well, it's this is really good stuff. We
I just love being surrounded by women with passion.
This has been awesome having you.
Yeah, I love it. It's fantastic. It's nice to be able to chat with all of you. Like I said, I'll be back for whenever you want to do more of this.
Before we wrap up, how can people connect with you and your company and what you're doing? And work with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So Shift Awake Group, obviously you can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me at my website, which is shiftawake.com. Otherwise on Instagram, I have Shift Awake also on Facebook, Shift Awake Group. So either Shift Awake or Shift Awake Group, you can't miss me. Just kind of lock it down. You don't even probably need to remember my full name, Jacqueline Jasonowski. We won't even go into that. We won't even go with that.
I'm just calling you Jacqueline.
Yeah, I think that's probably much easier for everybody.
We're going to wrap up. Thanks again, Jacqueline, for being on with us today on Women Your Mother Warned You About. And thank you to all of our listeners to listening to this episode. To learn more about us, visit our website, womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com. You can also connect with me directly at ginatremarco.com to learn more about Pivot 10 Results, Carolina Improv, or to book me as a speaker or a trainer. And for Rachel Pitts, you can reach her too on womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com. Tell us more about how people can connect with you.
You can find me, Rachel Pitts, all over social media as Rachel on Real Estate. And of course, you can find all of our links to our social media sites on our website, womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
And for Keith, where can people find you, Keith?
Well, they can go to that website, womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com, and go to my LinkedIn profile from there.
All right. And one last reminder, if you have not given us a review or a rating, you can do so on iTunes, and you can access our iTunes show on our website by clicking subscribe. That brings you straight to our iTunes link at womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com. And remember, Warners, keep it sexy. And remember, for the best relationships, keep it real, raw, and relevant.
And a little irreverence doesn't hurt either.
Bye, Warners.
Bye, ladies.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.